Not on blueprint. 66. Nate felt sick, violently sick. He'd gotten drunk at college a few times, and while there was no denying the hangovers were bad, he knew the real pain was at night when you crossed the line, when you went from fun drunk to horribly sick hugging the toilet drunk. Somewhere between the lounge fire door and Veek's door, while the building was roaring and the air had been filled with static, he'd crossed that line. But the taste in his mouth was bad milk, not booze. Gray, cloudy milk that had curdled and separated and turned rancid. Just the thought of it made his stomach churn even more. He was on the floor outside Veek's apartment. He didn't remember sitting down or falling. Veek sat next to him. Her lips trembled and told him she felt the same thing he did. Tim was still on his feet. The older man looked queasy, but he kept himself upright, somehow. And past Tim, Nate could see the window at the end of the hall. Something was wrong about it, but he couldn't figure out what. It nagged at the back of his whirling mind. It was quiet. After all the noise the building had made, the quiet boomed up and down the hall like the hour after a concert.
Are you okay?
Veek patted his arm with a clumsy hand. Her voice sounded muffled. She wrinkled her brow and he realized she'd heard it too. She reached up and touched her ears, then closed her eyes and swallowed twice.
My ears popped, she said.
He swallowed, and his stomach rumbled. For a moment he thought he was going to throw up on her, but he got it under control. He swallowed again and felt a quick rush from his ears.
Ah,
he said.
Better? Yeah, thanks.
They struggled up to their feet. Tim lifted his foot and slammed it into Debbie and Clive's door. There was a crack of wood, some splinters flew from the lock, and the door smashed open. A dark-haired man none of them knew raced out of the apartment. He swung a wide punch, and Tim did something fast with his hands. The dark man grunted, and a knife clattered to the floor. Tim slammed his head forward into the other man's nose and drove a punch into his gut. The man tried to drag Tim down as he slumped to the floor, and Tim hit him in the face with a knee. He grabbed the man's jaw, pulled hard, and a sharp crack echoed in the hall. Nate stepped forward, even though he had no idea how he could be helpful, and heard a roar inside the apartment. Another man charged through the door. Tim had a large television remote in his hand. Just as Nate was registering the absurdity of that and realized what the older man was really holding, the television remote thundered twice and spit brass out its side. The man in the apartment staggered a few more feet and Tim fired again. The man crumpled to the floor. Tim marched into Clive and Debbie's apartment. Nate and Veek stumbled after him. The walls were open and the controls exposed. With the wooden panels slotted away, Nate could hear the whining of the machine and a sound like a grinding transmission. Electricity sparked and crackled behind the instruments. Andrew stood in front of the controls with an older woman. A larger man, his face shadowed by a gray hoodie, stepped toward Tim. Another one crouched by Debbie and Clive, both prone on the floor and coughing. Clive had the unmistakable wetness around his mouth of someone who'd just thrown up. The crouching man had a knife. Tim fired once. The blade flashed and hurled itself across the room. The man howled and exposed a mouthful of crooked teeth. A second shot hit him in the side of the head and knocked him down next to Debbie. She and Clive screamed. The larger man, the closer one, growled and reached out. Tim grabbed two of the grasping fingers and twisted them. They made a bubble wrap noise. His other hand swung forward and pistol-whipped the large man twice, back and forth, across his broad jaw. The giant spat out a tooth and growled again. His mouth opened, and it split his head in half. Nate glimpsed it from the doorway and thought the man's head had somehow been chopped off and was getting ready to tumble. Tim fired point blank into one of the man's wide eyes. The giant dropped to the ground. The old woman howled and waddled forward.
"Auntie, no," shouted Andrew. "It doesn't matter."
The old woman lumbered to a halt halfway across the room. Nate, Veek, and Tim could see she had the same wide mouth and swollen eyes as the giant on the floor. They were even more distorted on her face.
"Down," said Tim. "No fucking around. On the floor, now."
The old woman sighed, crouched, and lowered herself to her knees. She panted when she was done. She raised her arms awkwardly. They were too heavy to get them much above her shoulders. Tim suddenly had another pistol in his left hand. This one stayed on the old woman while the first one shifted to cover Andrew.
"Step away from the controls," he said. "On the floor."
If Nate was right. It had only been 15 seconds since Tim kicked open the door. Tim angled his head back without letting anyone out of his sight.
Nate, can you look in Clive's toolbox over there? He should have some rope or zip ties we can use on these people.
All four men were dead. Tim had killed all of them in 15 seconds. He'd made it look easy.
Nate?
Sure.
The toolbox was by the window, and there was something wrong with the window's inside, too. Nate couldn't spare the attention to figure out why.
Veek, Tim said, why don't you check on our friends?
Veek made her way around the creepy old woman to Clive and Debbie. Clive looked stunned. Debbie seemed to be doing better. She looked up as Veek touched her arm.
Veek, she said, are you okay?
I'm good, she said. I think we're all good.
Debbie squeezed her arms.
What happened?
Freedom has happened, said Andrew, a blissful smile spread across his face. Freedom from a tyranny on all our souls for over 100 years.
Tim looked down the pistol sights at Andrew. No more talking, he said. You don't speak unless you're spoken to. Clear?
If you wish. It makes no difference. The path has been made clear, and soon our Lord and his fellow gods will come to reward us for—
Shut up, Andrew, Tim said.
The skinny man's smile got wider. His head went side to side.
You have a gun,
Debbie said to Tim.
I've got two, he told her. If it makes you feel better, you can hold one of them.
Clive, said Nate. He'd gone through half the drawers in the large wooden chest. Help me find this stuff. Clive blinked a few times. Debbie rubbed his arms, and Veek tried to clean up his face with a wad of paper towels.
Okay, he muttered.
He took a few deep breaths.
I'm okay. Nate could use some help, Clive, said Tim. You know your tools better than anyone else here.
Clive stumbled to his feet with some help from Debbie. They went over to the toolbox. He pushed Nate out of the way and crouched to one of the lower drawers. The floor creaked by the door. Tim spun, keeping one pistol on the old woman. Zila shrieked and Roger threw his hands up.
Whoa, he shouted. It's us, bro.
Sorry, said Tim. Old habits.
Fuck me, said Roger.
He spit a mouthful of stomach acid into the hall and looked at the bodies.
Look at the old man going all Bruce Willis on us.
Clive pulled a bundle of black plastic zip ties from one of the drawers of the chest. Each one was at least a foot long. He split the bundle and gave half to Nate.
Are they dead?
Asked Zila.
I hope so, said Tim. But I'm not feeling confident about anything right now.
He gestured at the big windows. Weak sunlight streamed through the glass. Clive looked at the wall clock that read 9:10. Debbie looked up at it too and then stepped to be near her husband. Zila and Roger moved to join them. Veek went to stand by Nate at the window.
Guys,
said Zila,
where are we?
The brick building, which stood a dozen feet to the south, was gone. So was the building behind it, and the one past that. As far as they could see was rocky hillside spotted with patches of yellow grass and a few sickly palm trees.
It looked like the prehistoric setting for dozens of B-movies.
Veek pressed her face to the glass and looked toward the front of the building. There was more wasteland, the same behind them. All the other buildings on the street had vanished. So had Kenmore Avenue itself, as far as she could tell. The shrunken ball of the sun was a bright spot in the blood-colored sky. It was an ember, the last remnant of a holiday bonfire that had burned out the day before.
Everything looks dead,
said Debbie. Tim cleared his throat.
Speaking of which,
Clive bound Andrew as Nate cinched a zip tie on the old woman's left wrist. She had fat wrists. Her arms were so blubbery she couldn't put them together behind her back. He ended up making a chain of zip ties to hold her. The woman's skin was pale and decorated with spots that were too dark to be freckles. She smelled damp and cold under a cloud of floral perfume that might have just been a generous coat of Lysol. Nate felt a pulse in her wrist and she yelped when the zip ties bit down, but he couldn't shake the feeling he was tying up a waterlogged corpse. He also felt the thick muscles under her blubber and decided to add another set of bindings, just to be safe. Maybe two more.
So,
Veek said. She stepped back from the window and looked at Tim.
You learned how to shoot because you published a book on it?
his lip twisted in a wry smile.
Not quite.
So what's the deal? Asked Nate. Are you, like, a hitman or something? An assassin?
Let's just say, or something. Before I retired, I worked for an outfit best known by three letters.
Holy shit, said Roger from the window. You learned all this at IBM?
Tim smirked.
Yeah, IBM's got one hell of an employee training program.
Fuck me, Roger said.
I'm guessing telling us this violates some rules or laws or something, said Veek.
Tons, said Tim. And at least one act of Congress, but like I said, I think we've got bigger problems.
Guys, said Zila,
what the hell are those? Oh my God, said Debbie.
A quartet of green shapes soared through the air a mile or so up, in that altitude reserved for passenger planes or the occasional fighter jet.
It would have been easy to call them whales, but it would have been wrong.
Wings stretched off the enormous bodies. They were thin, bony wings that let the weak sunlight through them. If they were smaller, they'd be bat wings, but on this scale, the unspoken, unnecessary agreement was they were the wings of a dragon. Beneath the base of the wings sat wiry arms with talons, like a bird's legs tucked away for flight, or the small forelimbs of a dinosaur armed with curving claws that were never used. Their bodies tapered to a reptilian tail. Where there should have been a head, or at least some type of face, was just a mass of tentacles. At least two or three dozen ropes of muscle stretched out from each whale to pick and snatch at the air. The tentacles had to be 40 or 50 feet long, although it looked like each creature had a few as long as its body. The smallest was over 200 feet long. The largest one, an alpha among alpha predators, was at least four times that. Even as high up as they were, its monstrous wings cast shadows across the ground. They coasted at a lazy pace, drifting on unseen winds. Their path led them across the wasteland and towards the Kavach building.